brothers and sisters, two scenarios. The first in Isaiah 66, beginning with verse 15. Isaiah 66:15. For behold, Yahweh will come with fire, and his chariots shall be like the whirlwind, to render his anger with fierceness, and his rebuke with flames of fire. For by fire will Yahweh execute judgment, and by his sword upon all flesh. And the killed of Yahweh shall be many. They that sanctify themselves and purify themselves to go to the gardens, behind one in the middle, eating swine's flesh and the abomination and the mouse, they shall come to an end together, says Yahweh. Second scenario, Psalm 15. Psalm 15. Yahweh, who shall sojourn in your tabernacle? Who shall dwell in your holy hill? He that walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks truth in his heart. He that slanders not with his tongue, nor does evil to his friend, nor takes up a reproach against his neighbor. In whose eyes a reprobate is despised, but who honors them that fear Yahweh. He that swears to his own hurt and changes not. He that puts not out his money to interest, nor takes reward against the innocent. He that does these things shall never be moved. Which one will we follow as worshipers of Yahweh the Most High? In these two passages of Scripture, we see two attempts at sanctification and purification, but from opposite ends of the spectrum. One purifies himself for idolatrous purposes, and the other for Yahweh, our Creator. The last time we met, we began an examination of the basic teachings found in the Bible, as we learned how the Sabbath, the seventh day, is meant to be a sign that shows how Yahweh's people is separate and distinct from the rest of mankind. Always remember that Yahweh's Torah, his law, or more properly, instruction, was given to his people in order to make a distinction between the sacred and the profane. Today I'd like for us to take a brief look at another series of commandments that emphasizes a separation between a people that is willing to follow Yahweh and a people that does not care what he commands. Let's take a few moments to examine Yahweh's dietary laws. The title of the short sermon today is Yahweh's Dietary Laws, A Pure Body, A Pure Heart. Yahweh's Dietary Laws, A Pure Body, A Pure Heart. You hear many strange things when you discuss the word of Yahweh with people who are not interested in following his law. Of course, you hear the customary line about the law being done away with after the death and resurrection of Yahshua the Messiah. And as you go deeper into studying specific topics, you hear even stranger things about particular teachings, especially regarding issues like the dietary laws. People will point to several scriptures that on the surface would appear to say that dietary laws do not need to be kept. But on closer examination, can that be true? One of the most common things you will hear is that the dietary laws were given at a time when hygienic conditions were poor, and therefore the dietary laws served the purpose to maintain proper health, but today they no longer apply because hygienic conditions are better. But on closer examination, can this be true? Well, although we do not have time for a complete study this morning, we'll touch on a few of these common misperceptions today, or misconceptions rather. Of course, the most basic biblical passage, really the foundational text on the subject, is found in Leviticus 11. So let's turn there momentarily. Leviticus 11. Excuse me. And Yahweh spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying to them, speak to the children of Israel, saying, these are the living things which you may eat among all the beasts that are on the earth. So immediately Yahweh tells you, these are the things that you're going to be able to eat. Whatever has a split hoof completely divided, and choose the cud among the beasts, that may you eat. So Yahweh is very clear. He's very specific in terms of the types of animals that may be eaten. And specifically, these are animals that have a cloven hoof, okay, and that chew the cud. In other words, they're referred to in scientific terms as being ruminants. And typically, and I'm probably not explaining this in the most technical way that you could, but typically animals that are ruminants have two stomachs or various compartments in their digestive system. And in essence, they chew their food more than once. And cows fit this description, as do goats and others, as you well know. But those two conditions need to be met. They need to have cloven hooves, and they need to chew the cud. Okay. Nevertheless, these you shall not eat of them that chew the cud, or of them that have a split hoof. The camel, because it chews the cud, but does not have a split hoof, it is unclean to you. And the coney, because it chews the cud, but does not have a split hoof, it is unclean to you. And the hare, because it chews the cud but does not have a split hoof, it is unclean to you. And the swine, because it has a split hoof, completely divided, but chews not the cud, it is unclean to you. Of their flesh you shall not eat, and their carcasses you shall not touch. They are unclean to you. So both conditions have to be met. If one is met, it's not enough. And sometimes there's confusion because someone will look at a particular animal and say, well, it meets this condition, but it has to meet both, according to Yahweh's word. Verse 9, these may you eat of all that are in the waters. Whatever has fins and scales in the waters, in the seas, and in the rivers, that you may eat. Again, two conditions. The fish must have fins, and the fish must have scales. And all that have not fins and scales in the seas and in the rivers, of all that move in the waters, and of all the living creatures that are in the waters, they are an abomination to you. And it continues to describe that you shall not eat these things. Okay, so you will find that things such as bass and trout and other fish that we're commonly familiar with that have fins and scales, these are things that are acceptable, whereas things that are, for example, shellfish, crustacean-type creatures, lobsters, crabs, etc., these are things that don't meet the conditions of having the fins and the scales. And then you find some fish that may have one, but not the other. Again, both conditions have to be met. So we have to be very precise in that. And then verse 13, and these you shall have in abomination among the birds. They shall not be eaten. They are an abomination. The eagle and the gear eagle and the black vulture. And then it goes on to describe several other things explicitly mentioned. Now, in this case, with the birds, of course, we do not have specific conditions that Yahweh describes as have to be met. But as you look at these specific examples, you tend to see a pattern of scavenger-like creatures that you're not to eat amongst the birds. And through the course of history, we know that there are certain things such as chicken that you can eat, and duck has been debatable from time to time, depending on who you talk to. But the bottom line is that there's a commonality in the types of birds that are mentioned that you could see the logic. I mean, who amongst us would want to eat a vulture or an eagle? They're not very appetizing to begin with, but there are certain things that they do in terms of their nature that would lead us to understand why Yahweh would want us to keep away from those things. And then verse 20, all wing-creeping things that go upon all fours are an abomination to you. Yet these may you eat of all wing-creeping things that go on all fours, which have legs above their feet with which to leap upon the earth. Even these of them you may eat, the locust after its kind, the bald locust after its kind, the cricket after its kind, and the grasshopper after its kind. But all winged creeping things which have 4 feet are an abomination to you. Now we can go to an in-depth discussion about this, but truth be told, in our culture commonly today, you don't typically eat these types of things. Now, we could, upon examination, find out which ones would be appropriate. Okay, maybe you want to have them chocolate covered or something, but the fact of the matter is that most of us don't really eat locusts nowadays, okay, and things such as that. But Yahweh, the point is that Yahweh describes what may be in and what may not be eaten. Let's go a little further, verse 24. And by these you shall become unclean. Whoever touches the carcass of them shall be unclean until the evening. So not even just eating them, but touching their carcass, the dead bodies, is sufficient to make you ritually unclean. And whoever bears anything of the carcass of them shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the evening. And then you can continue reading throughout this passage, and it'll describe to you additional laws, which we don't have time to get into at the moment. But Yahweh describes very clearly what things we may and may not eat. But notice the key to all of this, and we will go to verse 44 of this chapter. So stay in the chapter for just a second. And we'll go to verse 44 in just 1 second. Notice the key, as we read this, to all of this is holiness. Holiness. Verse 44. For I am Yahweh your Elohim. Sanctify yourselves, therefore, and be holy, for I am holy. Neither shall you defile yourselves with any manner of creeping thing that moves upon the earth. For I am Yahweh that brought you up out of the land of Egypt to be your Elohim. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. So I want you to notice this very significant point in relation. It's very basic to the dietary laws, as it is to so many of Yahweh's commandments. When we understand that the term holy means separated for Yahweh's service, it is a separation, a distinction between something that is common or base, and something that is special and significant because Yahweh has given it a special purpose as his people. When you understand that, you understand the true intent of laws such as the dietary laws and the Sabbath and the holy days, etc. So notice that the key to all this is holiness. While people in the world may want to use health reasons as a convenient way to dismiss these dietary laws in our day, the truth of the matter is that the laws are intended for holiness. And health benefits just naturally follow from obeying Yahweh's word. In other words, health benefits are important, But they are a secondary reason to keep the dietary laws. Purity and holiness are the main reason, because Yahweh has commanded us to do so. It's like they asked one rabbi at some point, why don't you eat pork? And he said, I don't say I don't eat it because I don't like the taste of it. I don't eat it because Yahweh has said that I should not eat it. And that's a very significant statement. We do things oftentimes because Yahweh simply has said, don't do it. And because He's our Heavenly Father, we trust in His Word. And we know that there is a greater purpose. And we know that that purpose, in fact, is holiness and being separate and distinct. And this is the reason for the title of the message today. Yahweh's dietary laws, a pure body, a pure heart. When you obey Yahweh's laws concerning the Sabbath, concerning the holy days, concerning the dietary laws, etc., what you are in effect doing is outwardly demonstrating an inner desire to do Yahweh's will. By doing so, we elevate ourselves, we lift ourselves above the status of animals, and show that we are unique beings created in the image of Elohim. If you turn over to Deuteronomy 14, you see that there's a companion passage. Deuteronomy 14, you are the children of Yahweh your Elohim. You see, he identifies us as being his children. You shall not cut yourselves, nor make any baldness between your eyes for the dead. And these are other things that the worldly nations, idolatrous peoples, were doing. Yahweh doesn't want us to be just like everyone else. That doesn't take into account a greater purpose in life. For you are a holy people to Yahweh your Elohim. And there it is. That's the key. And Yahweh has chosen you to be a people for his own possession, above all peoples that are on the face of the earth. Should this make us arrogant then, and say, well, we have the truth, and we are holy, and therefore we are bigger than everything and everyone? No, it should not make us arrogant. On the contrary, it makes us humble, because it makes us an example to the peoples around us, a witness to the peoples around us, that our Elohim is special, and he's holy, and he expects certain standards from his people. You shall not eat any abominable thing. These are the beasts which you may eat, the ox, the sheep, and the goat, etc. And then he describes what you shall not eat. And you can read this entire passage later at your leisure. Verse 9, these you may eat of all that are in the waters. Whatever has fins and scales you may eat. There's a second witness regarding fish. And then verses 11 on speak about the clean birds that you may eat. Now verse 21, you shall not eat of anything that dies of itself. You may give it to the sojourner that is within your gates, that he may eat it, or you may sell it to a foreigner. So there, those who are not Yahweh's people don't have the same status as Yahweh's people. For you are a holy people to Yahweh your Elohim. You shall not boil a kid in its mother's milk. And we can go in all sorts of directions with that one, can't we? But we'll abstain for the time being. Now let's turn to an interesting passage in the New Testament. Acts chapter 15. Acts 15. And we have a foundation concerning the dietary laws, but let's just examine a couple of the objections that people normally have. Acts 15:19. This is, of course, the conference that took place among the apostles and some of the Pharisees at that time. And then at this point, all of the evidence has been heard and the judgment is being rendered by James, who was the leader of the congregation at that time. Therefore, my judgment is, verse 19, that we do not trouble them that from among the Gentiles turn to Yahweh, but that we write to them, that they abstain from the pollution of idols, and from fornication, and from what is strangled, and from blood. For Moses from generations of old has in every city them that preach him, being read in the synagogues every Sabbath. So the idea is, of course, amongst these new believers who have not been raised as Jews, we're going to require that they do these four things initially, so that they can be in direct compliance with Yahweh's law, and then the rest they'll learn as we go along, every Sabbath, as the law is taught to them in the synagogue. But amongst the four things, notice verse 20, from what is strangled, they abstain from what is strangled, and from blood. These are things that we cannot read out of context. We have to match them together with the sacred scriptures, with the Hebrew scriptures, that is. Let's turn over to Leviticus 17, verse 10, and we'll get a better understanding of this, hopefully. Leviticus 17, beginning with verse 10. And whatever man there is of the house of Israel, or of the strangers that sojourn among them, that eats any manner of blood, I will set my face against that soul that eats blood, and will cut him off from among his people. And here's the reason. For the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I have given it to you upon the altar to make atonement for your souls. For it is the blood that makes atonement by reason of life, of the life. Therefore I said to the children of Israel, no soul of you shall eat blood, neither shall any stranger that sojourns among you eat blood. And what man there is of the children of Israel or of the strangers that sojourn among them, who takes in hunting any beast or bird that may be eaten, He shall pour out the blood of it and cover it with dust. In other words, he's to bury it because you respect the life of that animal. This is a creation of Yahweh. And you don't just do any old thing with it. That's why it's really not a good thing when people throw away food, because you're in effect disrespecting Yahweh's creation and what he has provided for our sustenance. So you even treat the animals with respect to the point that you bury the blood. For as to the life of all flesh, the blood of it is all one with the life of it. Therefore I said to the children of Israel, you shall eat the blood of no manner of flesh, for the life of all flesh is the blood of it. Whoever eats it shall be cut off. See, you must respect life. Yahweh is the giver of life. To disregard it is to disregard Yahweh and the very meaning of his name, which implies existence. And every soul that eats that which dies of itself, or that which is torn of beasts, whether he is homeborn or a sojourner, he shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water, and be unclean until the evening. Then shall he be clean. And incidentally, when you take all of these things together, you understand that it's not hygiene that governs the dietary laws, because this cleanliness is clearly not speaking of washing your hands. And we're going to see something about that in the New Testament in just a moment. But it's speaking about something different. It's ritual purity, ritual cleanliness, holiness before Yahweh. But if he washes them not, nor bathes his flesh, then he shall bear his iniquity. So Leviticus 17, 10 through 16 provides the rationale behind the prohibition on the consumption of blood, which is what we read about in Acts 15. So if you discard the Old Testament, as many want to do, you cannot possibly understand the context of Acts 15, and therefore you'll be teaching incorrect doctrines. Let's go over to 1 Corinthians 8 to get a little bit better understanding also of the prohibitions found in Acts 15. 1 Corinthians chapter 8. And this is Paul speaking to the Corinthian congregation. Now concerning things sacrificed to idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. If any man thinks that he knows anything, he knows not yet as he ought to know. But if any man loves Yahweh, the same is known by him. Again, do not let knowledge puff you up. Concerning, therefore, the eating of things sacrificed to idols, we know that no idol is anything in the world, and that there is no Yahweh but one. For though there be that are called mighty ones, whether in heaven or on earth, as there are many mighty ones and many lords, yet to us there is one Elohim, the Father, of whom are all things, and we to him. And one master, Yahshua the Messiah, through whom are all things, and we through him. However, there is not that knowledge in all men, but some being used until now to the idol eat as of a thing sacrificed to an idol, and their conscience being weak is defiled. But food will not commend us to Elohim. Neither if we do not eat are we the better, nor if we eat are we the better. But take heed, lest by any means this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to the weak. For if a man see you who has knowledge sitting at meat in an idol's temple, will not his conscience, if he is weak, be emboldened to eat things sacrificed to idols? For through your knowledge, he that is weak perishes, the brother for whose sake the Messiah died. And thus, sinning against the brethren and wounding their conscience when it is weak, you sin against the Messiah. Therefore, if meat causes my brother to stumble, I will eat no flesh forevermore that I do not cause my brother to stumble. There it is, the dietary laws, we're going to throw them out the window. Because here it's saying that the food, what is it? It says in verse 8, but food will not commend us to Elohim, neither if we do not eat are we the worse. That's not what this is referring to at all. This has absolutely nothing to do with the dietary laws that we read in Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14. As Elder Worrell has explained in a recent Bible study, this has to do with the practice in those times of sacrificing, of dedicating meats in a marketplace to idols. And sometimes there were people who had a little bit of a more difficult time accepting that animal is not actually sacrificed to an idol, because the idol is nothing, it's a piece of stone. But he's saying here, if you find that there's someone who feels that way and sees that meat dedicated to idols, blessed in the name of a false mighty one, in other words, then so as not to offend that brother, don't eat the meat. Now going over to chapter 10 very quickly, a similar concept, verse 23. All things are lawful, but not all things are expedient. All things are lawful, but not all things edify. Let no man seek his own, but each his neighbor's good. Again, always looking towards your brother. How does your brother feel about this? Not everyone is at the same level of faith as the other. You have to do things with your brother in mind, you see. Whatever is sold in the marketplace, eat, asking no question for conscience' sake. For the earth is Yahweh's and the fullness of it. There it is. We no longer have to ask questions, you see. For if one of them that believe not bids you to a feast, and you are disposed to go, whatever is set before you, eat, asking no question for conscience' sake. See, you can't take this out of context. Read on. But if any man say to you, this has been offered in sacrifice, eat not, for his sake that showed it, and for conscience' sake. Conscience, I say, not your own, but the other's. For why is my liberty judged by another's conscience? And in verse 32, give no occasion, let's try 31. Therefore, wherever you eat, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of Yahweh. Give no occasion of stumbling either to Jews or to Greeks or to the assembly of Yahweh. Even as I also please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved. Again, this is dealing with the issue of meats that were sacrificed to idols. This has absolutely nothing to do with the dietary laws. So don't be afraid of these scriptures when people will bring them up to you and try to use them to shake your faith regarding Yahweh's dietary laws. Confront these scriptures in an honest manner and look at them clearly. It's Yahweh's word. We can't ignore it, pretend, and hope that it'll go away. Instead, let's try to understand these things. And obviously, in just a short sermon in the morning, there's no way that we can go in fully in depth into that. But I just want you to be aware that these are not scriptures that should shake your faith. On the contrary, they mean specific things, and you cannot take them out of their context, or they could be made to mean anything anyone wants them to mean. These scriptures have very clear explanations, as we were describing this morning. And I wish we had time to go in depth on all these things, but I'm going to go to two other quick passages, if you'll bear with me. But on the surface, and taken out of context, some would say that these things allow you to eat anything. But clearly, such is not the case. Clearly, this has absolutely nothing to do with clean and unclean, but with the issue of meats dedicated to idols, etc. Now, Mark 7. Mark 7 is an interesting passage dealing with the Messiah himself. And I was going to read from the beginning, but suffice it to say that the disciples of Yahshua were being upbraided by the Pharisees, because they were eating without having first washed their hands. And this is something that you got to understand, that tradition, oral law, was superseding the word of Yahweh. And Yahshua tells them, no, this is not correct. Verse 8, you leave the commandment of Elohim and hold fast the tradition of men. And he said to them, full well do you reject the commandment of Elohim, but you may keep your that you may keep your tradition. And then down in verse 14, he's giving the proper explanation. And he called to him the multitude again and said to them, hear me, all of you, and understand. There is nothing from outside the man that going into him can defile him. But the things which proceed out of the man are those that defile him. And then down in verse 18, and he says to them, to his disciples, are you so without understanding also? Perceive you not that whatever from outside goes into the man, it cannot defile him, but into his, it cannot defile him, because it goes not into his heart, but into his belly, and goes out into the draught, carrying off all that is eaten. And he said, that which proceeds out of the man, that defiles the man. In other words, the things coming from within, evil thoughts and heresies and wickedness and all that business. In other words, he's giving a spiritual lesson, a spiritual application here, trying to say, he's using the physical to describe a spiritual point. It's not what you're taking into your body, but the evil things coming from your heart, outwardly, that's going to actually defile you. But people will make a big issue of verse 19, because if you look at some versions, it tells you, because it goes, referring to the food, it goes not into his heart, but into his belly, and goes off into the draft, and then it says in some versions, purging all that is eaten. And then this little parenthetical you see, it says, this he declared, making all foods clean. That doesn't appear in the text, brothers and sisters. And if I went to several commentaries with you and several translations, you will see that in some versions, that has been inserted into a text. It is a commentary that does not belong in that text. This is actually translated, in my opinion, correctly, carrying off all that is eaten. This is based on what's known as the Syriac translation. It's an Aramaic version of the text. And this is basically saying that the food is taken into the body, and the body uses what it needs, the nutrients, and the rest of it is purged through the digestive process. And that's all that this is referring to. And I wanted to read very quickly, this is a New English Bible, the importance of looking at different translations. And the New English Bible says this, and the same verse, Mark 7, 19. And as I'm looking for this, I want to reiterate my point. Don't be disturbed when people bring these things up. There's a reason. Look for it. And look to see, first of all, was it even in the text? 7:19, because it does not enter into his heart, but into his stomach, and so passes out into the drain. Okay? And it goes on. Then you'll see in here, in the Companion Bible, which is actually, it's a King James Version, but there's a commentary here. Now, of course, he wants to make it seem something that coincides with its own doctrine, so he puts a note saying, purging all meats, supply the ellipsis, thus being the eternal commandment on the Master's words, this he said, making all meats clean. That's his opinion. That's not what the text says. Then it says the Syriac, which is the Aramaic, reads, carrying off all that is eaten. Two very different things. So don't be afraid when you see things like that. And you have to ask yourself, if this is not consistent in this translation with what the rest of Scripture says, why is it not consistent? Don't be afraid of it. Confront it and deal with it. Because then you will be able to better explain it to others as well as it will solidify your own faith, you see. Now, I won't have time to go over to Acts 10, but if you can jot down in your notes, Acts 10, verses 9 to 29, this is the vision of Peter. And this is a big one, because Peter sees the vision, and the basket comes down, and in the vision he hears the voice with all kinds of animals, unclean and clean, and it says to Peter, rise, Peter, kill and eat. Oh, there it is. The Almighty saying, you can eat anything that you want. And then Peter says, not so, Master, I've never put anything unclean into my mouth. And then the voice says, what I have declared clean, do not call you unclean. But then if you go continue down to the passage, it tells you exactly what that is dealing with. It has nothing whatsoever to do with the dietary laws. On the contrary, in the context in which it was written, it has to do with the fact that Yahweh called the Gentiles to the faith. And he explains it clearly. And I will read one verse from there. Go to Acts 10 very quickly. And we'll read down in verse 17. This is Acts 10:17. Now while Peter was much perplexed, means he was very confused in himself what the vision which he had seen might mean, then these Gentiles come to his house. Now why would Peter be very confused? Seems to me the Master spoken to him. Why would it not be clear to him? Well, I can eat anything I want to eat. He's perplexed because he'd never been taught that before. Think of this logically. Why did Yahshua, when he was walking on the earth, never say to him, Peter, you can eat whatever you want? Why all of a sudden wait to a vision to do it? See, there are inconsistencies in people's logic, but they want to carry it to a conclusion that it does not mean. It's not a good thing. Let the Bible interpret itself. So he's perplexed. He's confused. And if we go down the same chapter to verse 28, this is Peter speaking to these people, and he said to them, you yourselves know how it is an unlawful thing for a man that is a Jew to join himself or come to one of another nation. And yet to me has Yahweh showed that I should not call any man common or unclean. The Bible gives its own interpretation. And this is the meaning. And Peter finally understood when these people came. He finally understood what the vision meant. He was no longer perplexed. So let's accept Yahweh's explanations and not try to impose upon the word our own desires. There are many other passages that are normally taken out of context to support doing away with the dietary laws, but ultimately, Yahweh's word is clear in teaching that purity of the heart is demonstrated by purity of the body. Following Yahweh's dietary laws faithfully will show the world that we are different and will demonstrate that we are different and will show that we want to overcome carnality and live our lives in such a way that the Spirit will work within us to perfect us unto the day of Yahshua's return and onward into the kingdom and in eternity spent with our Heavenly Father in peace. So, brothers and sisters, don't be disturbed by these things when you see other people challenging what we believe, but rather confront the Scriptures in an honest way, understand what they mean, and then let's apply them in our lives and give the witness to those around us. May Yahweh bless you as we continue on this Sabbath day.